So I hate buying toothpaste. I was down at Mariano's this last week buying toothpaste, and I checked. According to their website, they have 180 different options. 180. I mean, you go there, and it's like there's Crest, and there's Colgate, and there's Arm & Hammer, and there's Sensodyne, and there's Tom's of Maine. And you can choose, you know, your Cool Mint, or your Peppermint, or your Spearmint, or your Radiant Mint, bubblegum or watermelon burst, and you can get toothpaste that has baking soda or peroxide or mouthwash or activated charcoal, and you can get the sparkling fresh for kids. You can get the optimal white with deep stain remover. You can get the Max Fresh with breath strips, and it is just overwhelming. And this phenomenon with all these dizzying choices is really symptomatic of something much larger in our society. And this is the belief that we have that the more choices you have, the better. But the truth is that having all of those dizzying options can sometimes be absolutely paralyzing. How do you make the right one? I mean, if there's all of these different options, one of them must be the absolute right one. And so we need to spend time figuring out which one that is, because if we don't get that, then we're not getting the best we could get, right? Or what if we get something and it just turns out to be okay? Or we get something and it's not that great. Or we get something and we think it's fine, but then somebody else tells us about something else that's even better. And so sometimes we might even be hesitant to make choices. Well, I don't even want to choose, and yet that in itself is also making a choice. Well, in our contemporary world, we have this dizzying array of choices to make, but the truth is people have always had a lot of options. And in our text for this morning, we find Jesus interacting with three different people and talking to them about choices, and in particular, the choice to become his follower. So the first person in this story comes up to Jesus and volunteers and says to him very boldly, "I will follow you wherever you go." Now, one might expect a couple of different options, a couple of different responses from Jesus. He might say, "Great, glad to have you, come on board." Or maybe Jesus would look at the guy and say, "I don't think you quite have what it takes for the job, so thanks, but no thanks." But Jesus doesn't do either of those things. Instead, Jesus turns the choice back on the volunteer himself. He clarifies for this man what the consequences of the choice would be. If he chooses to follow Jesus, he's going to have to give up a certain amount of comfort and security, in fact. In fact, he may have less comfort and security than some animals have. You know, foxes and birds have their own homes, but he's going to have to wander around wherever Jesus goes. He's going to have to rely on others to support him, to provide his needs. And so Jesus doesn't make that choice for this person. He simply tells him, he doesn't say, "Yes, come join me," or "No, thanks, I'll find somebody else." He just gives him all the relevant information. And the person has to make his own choice. The second person, then, is somebody that Jesus goes to recruit them. And it gives them the invitation, "Follow me." And the person says, "Well, first let me go and bury my father." Now, it's hard to tell if this is a really sincere response of, "Sure, I'd love to, but I've got, something to take care of," or if this person is just kind of making an excuse to put Jesus off. In any case, Jesus rejects the excuse that he makes, and he says, "Let the dead bury their own dead," which sounds pretty cold-hearted and, frankly, isn't even possible, right? It might not be have been quite as cold-hearted in that context as we would hear it today, because when he says, "Let me bury my father," it doesn't necessarily mean that his father has already passed away and they're just making preparations. It may be a way of saying, "I have obligations that I need to fulfill to my father until he passes away." And in fact, in the culture, it may not even those obligations may not end with the person's death. I mean, in the Middle East and in other cultures, it's often common to have a period of mourning for up to a year where there are still certain societal obligations that one has to fulfill. And so the man may be putting this off for an extended period of time. And so it's a way really of keeping his options open, if you will. He doesn't want to choose too quickly. He doesn't want to make a commitment before he's ready, but in refusing to make a commitment, the choice is made for him because Jesus doesn't have time and needs to move on. And then we have the third and the final person in the story. Like the first one, this one comes to Jesus and volunteers to be a follower of Christ, apparently even after he's heard what Jesus has said to the person before him about the dead burying their own dead. And this man has simply a simple request. Let me go and say goodbye to my family. Seems like a reasonable request, right? He just needs to go give one last farewell to his folks, and he'll come on back and follow. I mean, how can Jesus refuse that, right? But he does. What is it about this seemingly reasonable request that leads Jesus to reject him? I mean, does he think this man's not sincere? That's a possibility. Or again, maybe it's just that Jesus knows that his time is very limited. He's got places to go, things to do, people to see. He can't stand around and wait for this guy to do whatever he thinks he needs to do. He doesn't have time to waste. And so Jesus then gives this sort of cryptic statement. He says, "No one who puts a hand on the plow and looks back is fit for God's kingdom." Now, it's helpful in trying to unpack that to know something about the story of Elijah and Elisha. Because when God tells Elijah to anoint Elisha as his successor, Elijah goes out. He finds Elisha plowing in the field. Elijah walks along, throws his coat over Elisha's shoulder, literally passing the mantle onto him. And yes, that's actually where that saying comes from. And Elisha immediately leaves his plowing behind and goes to follow Elijah. But he says to him, first, "Let me kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow you." And in that instance, Elijah says, "Sure, go ahead." And it's not just a simple farewell. It's actually a fairly elaborate. What Elisha does is he slaughters the oxen that he's just been plowing with, and then he uses the equipment to build a fire to roast it and make this whole feast for all of his friends and family. And it's a very graphic way of marking the end of one life and the beginning of a new one for him. But while that may have been the model for Elijah and Elisha, Jesus says, no, that's not what I'm asking in this instance. He refuses to let this would-be follower to engage in those same reactions. Instead, he says the kingdom of God has to be the highest priority. Nothing should ever keep followers of Jesus from focusing on that priority, living as citizens of the kingdom. And those who look back, those who think about what might have been or reminisce about the good old days can easily be sidetracked. And fickle people who choose something one day and change their minds about it the next, those are not the folks who are ready to be followers of Jesus. Now that's as much as we know about these three people. Interestingly, Luke never tells us what choices they ultimately make. We presume from what they say and what Jesus says to them that they do not follow Jesus, but the text actually never tells us that. I mean, it doesn't seem that they're willing or able to make the sacrifices in order to follow through on their intentions, but we don't know that for certain. Ultimately, what Jesus tells these followers, would-be followers, is that they need to be ready not just to make a choice, but to make a commitment. And that's the same thing that Jesus says to each of us as well. Choosing to follow Jesus, simply put, is not the same as choosing which kind of toothpaste to buy. Okay? I mean, it's fine to go to buy Crest today because it's on sale, and the next time you go, you got a coupon for Arm & Hammer, so you get that instead. Or there's nothing wrong with switching things up a little bit and deciding to try the Cool Bend instead of the Spearmint that you've been using for a while. But following Christ is not something that you can choose to do one day and then just set aside the next. It's not like you wake up in the morning and say, am I going to be a Christian today or not? The choice to be a follower of Jesus is more like the choice to get married. And once one makes the choice, well, there are certain sorts of relationships that one no longer has the option to have anymore. I mean, yeah, I know it happens all the time, but that's not what we say in our vows about, forsaking all others, remaining faithful in sickness and in health, richer or poorer, till death do us part. That's the intent. And likewise, the choice that Jesus is asking us to make is a choice to commit ourselves wholeheartedly to the kingdom lifestyle. And for those truly committed to the kingdom, there are choices that we don't need to consider anymore. The removal of certain choices may be restricting, but in some ways it can also be quite freeing, because making the commitment to live as a citizen of the kingdom enables us to move beyond some of the puzzling array of choices that we are faced with every day. Now, I'm not suggesting here that making a commitment to follow Jesus means that we have this very strict set of rules that we simply follow. That's not at all. In fact, I would say that a lot of the people in churches that insist on specific codes of conduct often miss the mark when really living out what Jesus is actually saying. A lot of those, well, rarely do I hear those who insist that we should be a Christian nation talking about some of the things that Jesus talked about and lived out, things like liberating the oppressed and feeding the hungry and welcoming the stranger, all things that Jesus was very explicit in his teaching and his enactment. I am saying, however, that making a commitment to follow Jesus has a very direct effect on the choices that we make. Turning again to the analogy of the marriage, I mean, there are certain behaviors that I cannot engage in because of that commitment that I have made to my spouse. Likewise, there are choices that people in a healthy marriage will not make without at least consulting their spouse. You know, things like spending large amounts of money, changing jobs, going on a big trip. Those are all things that are worked out together. So here's one helpful guideline, I think, at least for those of us that are married, something to think about. These choices decisions that I make on which I should consult my spouse are probably decisions that I should also consider how it affects my relationship with Jesus. Truth is, Jesus has some pretty high demands in this text. I mean, what does he say here? He says, a human one has no place to lay his head. Let the dead bury their own dead. Do not look back. It's clear here that following him is a choice, it is a commitment not to be taken lightly. Mary Schurz, professor emerita at Anabaptist Mennonite Biblical Seminary, writes about this passage, while it is not a call to be homeless or to abandon those whom we love, it is a harsh call to put the kingdom of God absolutely first in our lives, not just metaphorically or theoretically, but really and truly and always. Now, as Anabaptist Mennonites, we say that following Jesus is a central part of who we are. In fact, our denomination, Mennonite Church USA, has identified three commitments that we share that are central to guiding our work as a church. And the very first one of those is following Jesus. The other two, by the way, are making peace and experiencing transformation, which one could argue are the direct result of that commitment to follow Jesus. In just over a week, many Mennonites will be gathering in Greensboro, North Carolina for our biannual convention under that theme of following Jesus. And we have a set of worship services that are guided by questions and topics related to that. Things like expectations for followers of Jesus. What does it mean to preach good news? What does healing look like? How do we join the ministry of liberation? And yes, let's celebrate God's love for us and for the world. As a congregation, we have affirmed this priority of following Jesus as well. It's in our own mission statement. You find it printed at the top of our bulletin every Sunday. It says, we are a worshiping community rooted in God's love, following Jesus, seeking peace and justice, serving others. Our verse of the year for this past year emphasizes that priority. It's one where Jesus announces, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And so as we seek to walk in that light, our text for today reminds us the commitment to following Jesus is not one that we take lightly. Our decision to be a follower is one that many of us may have made a long time ago, others not so long. But it is a choice, it is a commitment, a vow that we reaffirm or fail to affirm every day by the choices we make. So let me leave you with this thought for this morning. If you were accused of being a follower of Jesus, what is the evidence that could present it to support that accusation? What are the choices you make to demonstrate that commitment? Now, if you're here this morning in person or joining online, or even if you're, you know, listening to this audio later on off of our website, well, that's one choice you can point to, and that's great. What else? What are the big decisions you've made in your life that demonstrate your commitment to follow Jesus? And perhaps just as importantly, what are the smaller choices you've made just in the past few days that show you are a Jesus follower? Do the ways you spend your time and your money reflect your allegiance to God's kingdom? How have your values and your character been shaped by Jesus' example and his teachings? And what are the things that you have done or the things you have not done because of how those actions might align with the way of Christ? In final analysis, choosing among options for toothpaste at the supermarket, well, it may be a choice that has some impact on your oral health. But the choices you make on your commitment to follow Jesus can have far more significant consequences for your entire life and even beyond.